Anyway, oh, there I am. Wow. Volume. Oh, welcome to Woods and Water, South Carolina. It is good to be here. I will be accepting contributions. You can drop them off at the station this week. You know, as you enjoy this nice cool weather that's coming in. I was in California for most of the week and I brought a whole bunch of it back. So like I said, you can drop off any donations you feel appropriate at the front door here at the station. I'll pick them up next Saturday. Yeah, I was out in California. I've got a good friend of mine from high school who lives in a little town called Carpinteria, which is north of LA. And, he's been after me a few years to come out there. There are some things going on here that I need some help with, marketing side. And that's what he's done his entire life. So, hey, cashed in some Delta Sky miles, flew out to the left coast where the high temperature during the week was 73. The lows at night were, you know, upper 50s. We slept with the windows open and their house does not have air conditioning. So, you know, the mountains are 10 blocks east and the ocean's 8 blocks west. Walked pretty much everywhere we wanted to go. It was just a really neat few days out in California. The downside, their house is like 1900 square feet and is worth $1.16 million. 3 bedrooms, great room, kitchen, dining room. Yeah, you get the picture. It's nice, but man, you got to be able to afford the housing out there. It's unreal. Really cool thing is though, you still got motor lodges. You remember if you traveled much in the 50s, 60s, 70s, you remember the old one or two story level motor lodges kind of in a U-shaped building and you kind of pull through underneath an awning and parked in the, that's the way most of the hotels out there, at least on the Pacific Coast Highway, that's the way most of them are because it's too expensive to buy it, tear it down, go through the processing, the permit process and all that and build a new one. So it's really like stepping back in time. Got the movie tour a little bit while I was out there, saw some scenes from Point Break where they were on the beach, you know, the football game on the beach and then the beach fight with War Child and all those guys. That was, went there, went to eat at the restaurant where he went in to meet, what's her name? I can't remember. It's been a long time since I've seen the movie. Got to see where, if you remember, oh man, it just left me. Maybe it'll come back to me. We got to see another place on the beach where there was a series filmed and, oh man, just left me. That's what happens with old age. But anyway, like I said, great time. Good to be home. Love coming back to South Carolina. It's a little more hot and humid here. This is just home. It is National Dog Day. If you didn't know, August the 26th. Today is the 26th. It is. And it's no secret, one of my favorite authors is Gene Hill. And we'll get to the calendar here in just a few minutes. But one of my favorite authors is Gene Hill. Ton of outdoor books, mostly short stories, some shorter or longer than others. One of my favorites is Tears and Laughter, and it's about dogs. So I might try the tears part later, but right now we're going to do a bit of laughter. And it starts out like this. Since I've occasionally written about dogs, the way poker players describe second best hands, I've had readers write and ask for help with various problems that crop up with each one of man's best friends. Rather than answering each one specifically, which takes up a lot of time that I would rather spend bumming salmon flies, I'll attempt to cover them all in a general way. So these are some of the questions that Gene Hill's gotten over the years, and it's pretty funny. My retriever's a great dog. He's steady to shot, a good marker, and is willing to sleep on the end of my bed. The one fault he has is that when he retrieves, he only brings the ducks to within 8 or 10 feet of the blind, then drops it. What should I do? Well, the only sure cure that I know are to either buy waders or hip boots, depending on the depth of the water, and go out and pick it up yourself. Or if you think the distance is critical, move the blind 8 or 10 feet. Our Brittany is beautifully mannered except for one thing. She chews the upholstery in the front of our station wagon. What can I do? Remove the temptation. The best solution I found is to locate some old wooden shell cases or milk crates. Bolt them to the floor and take the cushions out when you leave the dog in the car. They're better for your back than the upholder seats. Anyway, our golden retriever likes to bark at night and is ruining my sleep. What should you do? Well, there are several answers to this common problem. Get a night job and sleep during the day. Get up and play until you're both exhausted. Bark at her when she's trying to sleep and see how she likes it. Duke, our English pointer, refuses to sleep on the floor and has just about ruined our furniture. My wife says it's either her or Duke. I'm desperate. Well, if Duke is as good as you say in the rest of your letter, see a lawyer. Oh, man, let's see. I've heard lots of stories at hunting camps about great grouse dogs, dogs that never bumped a bird, retrieved two at once, and things like that. My question is, what makes a grouse dog great? Well, at most of the hunting camps, it's Jack Daniels or Wild Turkey. So anyway, happy National Dog Day to you. That's a little bit of Gene Hill. We got a, I think in the last segment, I'm going to read a couple of, maybe one of his short stories. It'd be really good. For the calendar, and the calendar is always brought to you by Visit Anderson and Green Pond Landing and Event Center, which I understand they had a big, big eclipse party last Monday, and everything was packed. We watched a little bit of it from California. We only had like a 30% where the moon covered about 30% of the sun, but then again, we got to watch everything that happened across the country on TV, so I wasn't here to enjoy it, but I was looking out on TV, and I was actually FaceTiming with the girls here at home, so I got to see a little bit of it. But, hey, if you want to go trout fishing this week, DNR stocked 6,000 trout last week. North and Middle Saluda, Big East Otoe, South Saluda, Chattooga, Little East Otoe, Little Cane Break, Rocky Bottom, and East Fork of the Chattooga River and the Chaga. So, yeah, it's getting cool. It's getting about trout weather again. Give it another month or so, I'll be ready to get back up in the mountains and do a little more trout fishing. Dove season is coming up. If you don't know, next Saturday opens up. Afternoons only, Saturday and Monday, Labor Day, and then you can start shooting mornings after that. Riverbend Sportsman's Resort is offering a special warm-up and shooting instruction beginning August 23rd, so you're 3 days in, all the way through next Saturday. Skeet, five stand, and sporting clays. All targets are 45 cents per target. Golf carts, $8 per person. Shooting instruction, if you want to tune up a little bit, 75 per hour, 1 to 6 people, 45 cent per target. Lunch, $15. You can call Riverbend at 800-516-9606. Talk to Ralph Brindle over there and, go get ready for dove season. I'm a little down today. I went to mine yesterday and of course I was late getting it in. So it's really green still and I bush hogged a bunch and I saw two birds, one about 4:30 and one about 6. So, you know, it's not even almost worth going, but we'll see. I haven't missed one in years, so yeah, hope springs eternal. Maybe I'll go over there this week and there'll be some more birds there. The 56th annual South Carolina Apple Festival is coming up August the 26th today through Saturday, September 9th, and all sorts of stuff going on. This is taking place, so, and I would leave the page I needed at home. We'll come back to that one. I'll get some more information on the break and come back to that one. Photography series, Sunrise Session. This is down at Lighthouse Inlet Heritage Preserve, which is on Folly Beach, South Carolina. I believe this is through Charleston County Parks. Thursday, August 31st, awaken your senses to the natural and cultural world while stretching your photographic eye. Bring your camera and let a park naturalist lead you to inspirational locations. Ages 12 and up. August 31st, 6:30 a.m. to 8:30, directions to the Lighthouse Heritage Preserve, left on East Ashley Avenue. Follow this road to where it ends at the cul-de-sac. For more information, Parks and Program Services at Charleston County Parks and Recreation Commission. And the course is number 51120. Did you see Nikon's got a new camera coming out, like the D850? It's 40-something megapixels. But it's also $3,600. So yeah, you gotta get paid for a lot of pictures to buy that one. Cast off fishing tournaments, September the 2nd, if you're down in Charleston at the Mount Pleasant Pier, go along and it's for ages 13 and up and you're going to be helped with some great volunteers out there. Tournaments are held rain and shine. You know, you got prize categories for adults, ladies, youth. Again, that's at the Mount Pleasant Pier, which is under the Arthur Avenel Bridge in Mount Pleasant, South Carolina. So hang on through the break. Got a few more things, and then I'll go on to some more stuff. We got Brandon Cobb calling in at 3:30. Hang on through the break for more Woods and Water, South Carolina. Sleep. No, man. Great Glenn Campbell stuff. I think I'm going to leave that in the rotation. I like it. What a, you just can't say enough about a guy like that. All right. I went and found it. Excuse me for that. The South Carolina Apple Festival is in Westminster, South Carolina, August 26th through September 9th. Anything to do with apples. Coolest thing is, on Wednesday, September 6th, there is a Chattooga River float from Wildwater Limited, Long Creek. You can get a hold of them. But apple baking contest, live entertainment, Mr. and Ms. Apple Dumpling Children's Pageant, arts and crafts show, quilt show. Those are cool. Apple Festival Parade, rodeo. That's next Friday, September the 8th. Nope, that would be in 2 weeks. Then car show, children activities, a lot of things. That's the South Carolina Apple Festival, Westminster, South Carolina. And the last one of this week is, Summer Celebration of Water, which is Riverfront Park in Columbia, South Carolina. September 16th, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Science of Splash. What is a watershed and how does it work? Drink tap. Columbia's award-winning tap water, and learn how much plastic waste you can reduce by using reusable water bottles. It's kind of like the Kick It campaign from Costa Sunglasses. Paddle sports. Once again, we have free kayaking and paddle boarding in the Columbia Canal. Play zone. Youngsters can play on inflatable water slides, sprinklers, and more. What to wear? Well, you know, sunblock, hat, sunglasses, a t-shirt you don't mind getting wet in, a pair of shorts you don't mind getting wet in, old sneakers or sandals with straps that you don't mind getting wet in. Sounds like a good way to end the summer on September 16th, 10 to 2, down in Columbia, South Carolina. Started off, you know, dove season's coming up, and it was interesting. I had a friend of mine who's a writer, and I don't know how I feel about people going on and Facebooking to get ideas about how to write stories and that sort of thing. But he did. He said, look, I'm writing an article on dove hunting and all, and I wanted to see, you know, what are some things that, you know, tips you might like to give other people. And there were all sorts of people, you know, don't flock shoot, pick out a bird, you know, shoot them where they land, you can find them. Never take your eyes off one as it's going down in a field. And all those are great ones. But, you know, one of the things I learned as a young boy, because dove season, I mean, Labor Day weekend to anyone growing up in South Carolina in the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, kind of the beginning of the year was opening day of dove season. I mean, you fished all summer. Don't get me wrong. I mean, you had a grand time all summer but school was tempered because you knew dove season was coming at the same time. So it's always the beginning of the season, so to speak. Now it's beginning of football season, which I enjoy too. Don't get me wrong. I enjoy a little college football, and I think we all need a dose of college football rivalry so we can get off some of this other stuff. But, one of the best pieces of advice I ever got about dove hunting was from my dad. He didn't hunt, but structural engineer, Navy man, you know, everything had a place. And he was really one of the, I guess, like a lot of parents back then who made you clean up after yourself. And the first conservationist, you know, leave it like you found it or better. And one of the things he taught me about dove hunting was to always pick up your empties. You know, yeah, I didn't get them all, I'm sure. I mean, when it's a single shot shotgun, there's no excuse. You pop it open, you grab your empty, you put it in a bag or something, you carry it off the field. Over and under, side by side, same things. When you get up semi-auto, you know, it's chunking three shells out, fit my Browning A5, shoots them 15, 20 feet off to the right. And I have a hard time sometimes finding them. They're yellow to begin with because I shoot a 20. But always pick up those shells. You know, take a time after the shot, go find them. Or at the end of the day after the shooting's over, if you're on a DNR field, that stops at 6 o'clock. So take 10 or 15 minutes to, you know, pack it out. Hit those plastic shells and brass bases don't go away. They're there forever. I mean, my dove field over at the farm, I'm still finding a shell casing every once in a while when I'm plowing up a place. So, and that was one thing. He always asked me, clean up. He always told me if I find one shell in your dove field, that's the last time you're going to have a dove hunt over here. So I went around and I was amazed at how many people would come shoot, good friends of mine who wouldn't clean up. So there's one piece of advice I can give you when you're out there this year, just pick up after yourself. Leave things cleaner when you get there. It's a motto to live by. Hey, Skytop Orchard is open. I kind of printed out their little picking thing, and it looks like you're going to get starting into the Golden Delicious, Cortland Red Delicious, Jonathan's, Johnny Gold's, Fuji's. Those are all starting in on the first part of September, so make a, you know, get the family together, run up to Hendersonville or Zirconia, I think is actually where it is. And there's others out there, too. It's a great family thing to do. And it's apple season in North Carolina. Get out there and get you some good apples. And don't forget the apple cider cinnamon donuts. Yowzers. Okay, just made myself really hungry. From the Department of Natural Resources, they're going to conduct courtesy boat inspections for Labor Day weekend. They do this July the 4th, too. They usually do it around Memorial Day. This is the last one of the year. You know, just a check to make sure that you've got everything you need to be compliant with all the laws out on the water, because they want you to have a safe holiday or time out on the water anytime you're out there this summer. And this year, Sunday, September the 3rd, they're going to be Beaufort County, Cross Island, Cypress Gardens in Berkeley, Buck Hall in Charleston, Wapukut in Charleston, Morris Landing in Chesterfield, Jensen Landing, Dorchester, Lake Watery State Park in Fairfield, East Bay Street in Georgetown, Buster Boyd Landing in Lake Wiley, and then on the 4th, they're going to be on Lake Hartwell at River Forks, Clarendon at Lake Marion, Alex Marvin Landing, Harvin Landing, Lake Murray Dam, and then Gap Hill on Lake Kiwi on Pickens County. So, a good way to introduce your young ones to the Department of Natural Resources is through an event like this. Yes, it's an enforcement event. Yes, they also get time to talk, tell you why you have certain should have certain safety equipment on the board. And it's a rather than having a run-in with them, this is the way to start off somebody's relationship with the Department of Natural Resources. Get this question a lot, and I don't know that I can read this. You know what? Okay. There's a boaters, well, all of us that run two-cycle engines and four cycles, you know, there's a the 10% ethanol rule. There is a bill in Congress, and I was forwarded this by ASA, that will, you know, they're trying to increase the ethanol level to 15%, which, as everybody knows, would absolutely kill most engines because they're not built to run 15%. They're not meant to run that high an octane. I mean, it'll burn up through hoses and all that. So there's a bill in Congress, H.R. 1315, to amend the Clean Air Act to eliminate certain requirements under the Renewable Fuel Program to prohibit the administrator of the EPA from approving the introduction into commerce of gasoline that contains greater than 10% ethanol and for other purposes. So there's a lot of sponsors, co-sponsors and all, but it's important. You know, we often think that Washington is too far away to hear our voices. It's important to get your input in, and here's a way to do it. The bill is H.R. 1315. If you're a boater especially, you don't want to see 15% ethanol. 10% is bad enough. You don't want to see 10, 15. So H.R. 1315, take some action. Contact our South Carolina senators, House members, to get behind this when it comes up in committees. Okay, I was going back to it. Shooting ranges by county. The printed out list I've got here, I just can't read that thing. There are a lot of them that are commercial. There are a lot of them that are public. And I'm not a member of a gun club simply because I've got a place to go already. I wish I was closer to the place I had. So I'm just going to run through here, and you can find this whole list. dnr.sc.gov/shooting, and when you get there, you can do it by county, by name, statewide map to show you where things are. There are some range name abbreviations: Francis Mary National Forest, the South Carolina Department of Natural Resources, South Carolina Forestry Commission, and Sumter National Forest. Those are really the four public places you're going to find shooting ranges, and we'll just run through here a little bit. Abbeville County's got a couple. Rocky Knoll Sporting Clays, the Sumter National Forest Candy Branch Shooting Range, Aiken, Savannah River Rifle and Pistol Club, Anderson's got the Belt and Gun Club. I'm just skipping through a few of these. Bamberg, Broxenbridge Plantation, which is a pretty cool Civil War site. Berkeley County, Francis Mary National Forest, the Boggy Head Rifle Range. Charleston Public Range, Francis Mary National Forest, Twin Ponds Rifle Range, and that thing just went through a big upgrade. Chester County, Sumter National Forest, the Lead Shooting Range. That's there on the other side of the river from Lockhart. Let's see, Edgefield Public Shooting Range, Sumter National Forest, Beaver Dam Shooting Range. Greenville, we don't have one in Greenville. Do you have the Greenville Gun Club? Allen Arms Indoor Range, and Sharpshooters has got a range too. Hampton County, SCDNR Apalachicola Range, Webb Wildlife Management Range is there also. Let's see, run on through. Lawrence County's got three. Sumter National Forest, the Filson Crossroads, the Belfast and Archery Range, and the Belfast Shooting Range. That's a good one. Got down there. That Belfast Range has actually got some towers you can shoot at for archery. It's a walking, really nice archery range if you're an archery shooter and you want a little outdoor challenge instead of just a shooting lane at your local archery pro shop. That's a really nice one. Let's see if I can get Newberry County, Sumter National Forest, Indian Creek Shooting Range. Oconee has got Cedar Creek Shooting Range. Pickens has got the Pickens County Range. Richland County has the Watery Range. Spartanburg has the James O. Thomason Firing Range, which is public. Sumter County is, oh wow, we're almost out of time. Go figure. I got a lot more information here. Don't be flashing one at me when I got so much to do. Union County, the Fair Forest Shooting Range. So if you need a place to go shoot your rifle, shoot your bow, get ready for deer season, the worst thing you want to do is go in the woods unprepared. Those are just some of the places. Again, you can find those dnr.sc.gov/shooting, and then you can do it by county, range name, whatever you want to do. Man, I had a great article here on EHD that epizootic hemorrhagic disease. It's in the east. All right, well, hang on through the break. We're going to talk to Brandon Cobb about the FLW Cup, what he's done, what he did, and what he's going to do in the offseason. Hang on for more Woods and Water, South Carolina. And welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. He didn't have the finish that he really, really, really wanted, and all of us wanted to see a South Carolina guy win the 2017 Cup, but he's good enough to take a few minutes while he's on vacation to call us. Brandon Cobb, welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina.
Hey, Roger, I appreciate you having me on. Yeah, I'm up here in Ober Gatlinburg now. I was a little worried about cell phone signal, but I hope you can hear me pretty good.
Coming through loud and clear, my friend. Another third place. I mean, that's what you told me. On Sunday, another third, you know, that's pretty good. You beat 50 other guys, you know?
Yeah, no, third definitely, the funny thing is, the first year I went to the Cup at Wachita, I think the first year you came and followed me.
That's right, yep.
I was, couldn't be more excited with third. I mean, yeah. I'm like, man, my first Cup, third place, you can't, I mean, I just was happy to be there.
Sure.
Much less, didn't expect to make the top 10. And then Wheeler went pretty well last year, but right. Third, now I'm happy with third, but it was that was definitely one I wanted. I wanted that one pretty bad, but third still not a bad finish, and I'm happy for Justin, who's my travel partner and roommate on the tour. Justin was he deserved to win it that day. He had probably one of the best days of fishing he had all year on that final day, and when something like that happens, it's your time to win. And I just had. Which I had kind of a tough last day, but I still had decent weight.
Sure.
I actually would have figured that would have been enough to take it, you know.
Yeah.
But when somebody catches them, has a miraculous day like that final day, it's their day to win.
You know, the weights on that 3 day this past year was just 3 days. The winning weights were so much more than the 4 day total from 2014. That had to surprise you guys.
It did. It was the bite. Was the shallow bite was just as tough as it always is.
Right.
But that offshore topwater schooling fish, like fish that's coming up eating herring and eating topwater baits, was a lot better than it ever has been in August. It honestly fished more like late September, early October tournament. And I don't know if that was from the little bit of afternoon rains we've had or the combination of the cooler weather, the rain, and also the heron population is really strong on Murray now. I saw fish chasing 6- and 7-inch heron, which is humongous heron. I mean, they're always big, but right. The heron are really, really healthy right now.
Yeah, and I saw some of those big old herons skipping across the top of the water. I'm like, there's a big old fish to chase a bait fish that big.
That's right, yeah, and they were. I mean, to catch, I mean, I think I caught over 3 days, I probably caught 6 or 7 fish over 4 pounds.
Yeah.
Like weighed in the tournament, and that's just unreal for that. That's actually unreal for topwater fishing in general. That type of bite. I mean, a lot of times when it's good, you catch a ton of good fish, but they're 3.5 to maybe 4 pounders. And I mean, that last day, that one I had, I didn't weigh it, but it had to be over a 6-pounder, which is just, I mean, that's giants for out there following herring around.
And you would bring up that fish because Anthony was out on a point, and I apologize to you. I said something to you at the cup. You wear us out because you're jumping, you know, 3 casts here. So, and the problem is by the time I catch up, sit down, you know, get up on the deck, and you're picking up and going somewhere else. And it's really frustrating. But, you know, you were right there beside where I was sitting because Anthony parked on a brush fire like 1.5 hours. I like that kind of fishing. it gets boring. Yeah, it's not you. It gets boring after a while, but you pulled up. You and your 35 boats that were following you all day. And I was sitting there looking. I was like, there's Brandon. I ought to go over there. And I'm like, no, I don't want to go over there because he's going to fix the move. And about that time, he came off the front deck and we're, you know, and back in. I was like, see? I knew it. And then somebody said, oh, Brandon Cobb just caught a 6-pounder over there. And I'm like, really?
That's actually, I was just talking about that spot up here in Gatlinburg with my friends. We were talking about that. We're sitting up here and that's one of my only regrets I have from the whole week of that tournament. That place, I caught that 6-pounder.
Yeah.
There was a good many fish stooling kind of like that last day. That was actually what was weird. The fish, rather than sitting like I had known they were sitting, like I kind of felt like I had a good idea on every place there was fish. I knew where the fish would sit and I would pull up and throw over them. They didn't bite. I would leave.
Okay.
Well, that final day, they more or less roamed around and stooled, like actually visibly on top.
Okay.
And, that place, they were schooling real good, but I'd gotten that mentality of running and gunning, jumping around all week, and it worked good for me for 2 days.
Yeah.
In all fact, and I caught that 6-pounder, and there's still some schooling, but I had 100 more places running through my mind.
Right.
But looking back, I really have hardly any regrets from that whole entire week. I obviously wanted to win, but I don't feel like I made any bad decisions.
Sure.
But the one decision that could have changed the outcome, I wish I had stayed on that place a little longer.
Yeah, you never know, you know,
it's
you know what happened when you left it and went somewhere else, but you never know what happened. And that's gotta be a tough decision. You brought it up early, Justin Atkins, you being traveling roommates and all. What kind of, do you think you being his roommate and talking about Murray, and I don't know how much y'all talked about, I never asked. Do you think that affected him, or is he just that good a fisherman? Once he found those fish, he knew exactly what to do with them.
Well, Justin, he's great at learning like a type of fishing that's not something. I mean, he doesn't have very many herring around where he is, aside from maybe Smith, and so it's not something he's super familiar with. But he's a great fisherman, adapting and learning what to do, and he's a power fisherman. I mean, he's gonna, if there's any kind of bite he can find where he's running, throwing big baits, moving real fast, that's what he can find. And that was the best bite out there right then, or that at that time. And we talked about it some, and I'm sure I talked to him and Shane a lot because I had more experience on that type of bite. But Justin learned that on his own throughout the week and found some great places. And he's done it before. He did the college fishing thing and fished Lake Chattoo. And he's fished a lot of lakes with herring. So a lot of it was stuff he knew, just maybe had never been somewhere that it worked as good as it was working that week. Because that week was like textbook topwater herring fishing, calling fish out of cane piles, brush piles, whatever. That was as textbook as it gets. That was the best I've ever seen it, as long as I've been doing that.
And he just didn't make any mistakes, you know? None whatsoever.
That's right. I lost quite a few fish, and that's one thing, doing that type of fishing. You got big topwater baits making mile-long casts, and you hook fish. I mean, you can't expect to catch every one.
No.
And he lost some, too. I know he did, but that final day, he fished flawlessly, and I lost one big fish that final day that I don't know if it would have won it for me, but it would have made it real interesting when we weighed, where we wouldn't have known who was going to win.
Yeah.
So it was, it's just things have to go right when you're doing that type of fishing. It's not luck, but it's, you got to put yourself in the right opportunity a bunch of times and things have to go well.
Let me ask you this. When you're throwing 6-inch pencil poppers out, you know, however far y'all can launch those things, are you throwing mono or are you throwing braid?
Yeah, that's actually something. It's kind of up in the air. A lot of fishermen will tell you different things. I've always thrown mono.
Okay.
I was using 15-pound Yozuri hybrid line, just a regular old mono line, and I've always done that. A lot of people throw it on braid, and a lot of people like the braid because you're hooking them so far that you can hook them a little better with braid.
Sure.
But you also, I don't feel like with braid, the fish get it as well. With the mono, like when I set the hook, there's kind of a delay because of the stretch by
right.
the time they get it. And I personally like that because treble hooks, it doesn't take much to hook a fish
no.
with. I mean, when they bite, it about hooks them regardless of if you set the hook or not. So I want the fish, my theory is I want the fish to get the bait as far in their mouth as they can rather than I'm really worried about the hook set.
Okay.
And I've always thrown it on mono. It's really personal preference. I feel like I can throw it farther. And with braid, Even as much as I've done it, when they come up school and get really excited and try to launch one out there real
there's
quick.
There's a bird nest.
You'll get some backlashes and some 30-pound braid that they'll take you quite a while to get out. And that 15-pound mono is a little more manageable.
And I saw you guys bird nest a good bit. I mean, you're exactly right. I watched some of you guys, you know, you pull up on your school fish and you're like, you reel one in, set it down on the desk, pick up another one, and it's like zunk. And you can tell the action on the rod just kind of dips a little bit. And the head goes down, and you start picking it, and I'm like, uh-oh, happens to them, too.
It tends to happen. When you're trying to throw a home run cast every time, sometimes it just doesn't quite work out. But it's just something that happens. Those baits, though, like the Yozuri pencils and stuff like I was throwing, they all those heavy baits like that, they fly real well. But if wind catches them funny, you throw them so hard that you're going to have problems.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Now, the Yozuri, does that have the weight transfer system in the butt?
It does. Yeah, okay. I threw the saltwater one a lot, which actually the saltwater one's not something, it's not your typical bass bait. I actually had to get some before the cut because I'd never thrown one. I don't carry too many saltwater lures.
Sure.
You know? But I'm not sure if it does, but it's just heavy enough. It throws well. But the smaller, like 3DR and 3D pencils, they do. They have the weight transfer. And for them to be a smaller bait, you can launch them.
Arc rods, they did you well last that week, didn't they?
They did. Yeah. I was actually, the rods I was using was a little, it wasn't a traditional rod I would throw topwater with, but I was throwing real big, heavy bait and, like that saltwater pencil some and things like that. The baits weighed, I mean, close to an ounce. They were heavy. And so I was using a 7.6 medium heavy rod, which I've had a lot of people ask me about that. Like, what rod were you using to throw it so far? And normally I would throw a 7-foot, 7.3, kind of a medium, flimsier action.
Yeah.
And I was throwing a 7.6 medium heavy just because you're hooking fish so far away that you want a little more rod and you can throw it far. Man. It wears you out a little more because a 7.6 rod, I mean, just by physics, the way a 7.6 is heavier than a 7-foot. But it lets you get a little more range out of it.
I gotcha. You know, I don't know that everybody knows about what you went through towards the end of the season, but you broke your foot.
I did. I
was, about 30 seconds.
Wisconsin, in Wisconsin, the sixth tournament, I broke my heel bone and had to deal with it in the last two tournaments. The cuff, it was just starting to get better, and I'm still walking around up here. It's a little rough. It's getting better as the week goes.
Very good. Hey, 2018, back to Wachita. That was your other third place finish. Is it going to be, I mean, same time of the year? Are you going to do the same things you did in 2015?
Yeah, I'm hoping it's real similar. It should be the same. You never know how the grass can grow. I was fishing the grass a lot out there, so you never know about that.
Right.
I'm sure it'll be the same, burning around, burning down the bank, fighting the trees like you saw me last time, about falling out the boat every 10 minutes. But it'll make it interesting. I'm excited. Hopefully the year goes well and I can get one more shot at that one because that's a tournament. That was my first chance at the cup and I feel like I had a chance in that one. I'm really excited to get back.
Three for three. Hey, off season, you got some big plans for the off season, don't you?
I do actually. I'm up here in Gatlinburg with my fiance who we're getting married on November 4th.
Well,
it's been a long time coming. We've been together a while. So, it'll be finalized November 4th and I will be a married man next year fishing.
And taking care of her horses when she asks you to, right?
Yeah, that's right. She's actually got a great job with the horses now.
Oh, she got
give
it.
Give her a little credit. She is the Lander University equestrian coach in Greenwood. So.
Very nice. Yeah. I knew before the Cup she had interviewed for it and all. I didn't know she'd gotten it. Congratulations to Amy.
That's right. She's getting to do what she loves just like I am.
Very cool, Brandon. Well, thanks for being on, buddy. Have a good time up there. And let's catch up during the off season and see if we can't find something fun to do.
All right, that sounds good. Yeah, we'll go get after some fish. I'd like to go get after some redfish like you do sometimes.
Let's do it. Anytime, just call me.
All right, I will.
All right,
do,
my
man.
Friend.
Thank you for having me on.
All right, thanks, Brandon.
All right, bye-bye.
Well, there you got it. You know, he is just always in such a good mood. He's just like that all the time. Even when it's hot and tired and long days on the water. He's just always fun to be around. Brandon Cobb, Greenwood, South Carolina. Keep an eye on him. Going places. Hang on through the break. We'll be back with the last segment of Woods and Water, South Carolina.
Yeah, I'm going to miss her. Oh, looky there. I've got a bite.
To Woods and Water, South Carolina. I don't know if Paul planned that song that ended the last segment, but poor Brandon. Amy is a jewel. To put up with him for as long as she has, yeah, she's a jewel. He's a lucky guy. And yeah, both of them doing what they want to do. She is just a big horse. She loves horses and coaching at Lander right there close to Greenwood. Just going to fit them both perfectly. It is National Dog Day. And, I did a little bit of Gene Hill. If you don't have any Gene Hill's books, you ought to go get some. He died a few years back. Tears and Laughter, A Listening Walk, A Hunter's Fireside Book. It's really good. I don't know, outdoor short story type stuff. A lot of it's funny. A lot of them make you cry. You get some little moisture there in the corner of your eyes, even if you're a guy like me. But, you know, I grew up behind dogs. Started bird hunting behind a pointer named Lou. You know, we had dogs, Butch. We had a beagle for years. I mean, we did a West Coast trip one year and Butch was home for 30 something days by himself. Neighbor came over and fed him. You know, we left. He was sitting in the yard, came home and he was still sitting in the yard. Just loved dogs my whole life. You know, Yipper, Dixie, Belle, Trouble, Tom. And I've hunted behind pointers, setters, Brittany's, Boykins, short hairs, wire hairs, Labs, Chesapeakes. And, you know, if you go through life without a dog, you know, I won't say that it's a must, but it is. It just adds, like kids, it just adds a whole other dimension to life. And my wife and I got our first dog back in 93. We figured if we could raise a puppy, then we might do all right with kids. And we raised a puppy and think we're doing all right with two kids. You know, we've had as many as three dogs in the house with us. We're at one right now. And she is an inside dog, but just Sophie's just she's a lover. She loves to just lay there and pet. And anyway, a little different take on dogs from Gene Hill. Every dog should have a man. I've owned a lot of dogs who are strictly JV material or who, under more strict coaching, wouldn't even suit up. I guess that anyone who spends much time messing around with pointers, setters, spaniels, retrievers is going to get his share of the dull, the lazy, the ones that won't, and the ones that can't. As we all know, the most selective of breeding only creates so many good ones. The rest are scattered around us for the optimists who probably believe in the tooth fairy and the Easter bunny. But suppose it was the other way around. Setters who wouldn't only do their best for fine wing shots, retrievers who wouldn't give the time of day to a person who couldn't fling a training dummy a minimum of 50 yards, are hounds who demanded a man with superior night vision before they'd run a raccoon. If the dogs did the choosing, how many of us would be sitting in front of the kennel TV? I can imagine a quail dog saying, well, Hilly is good form and looks like he can go all day, but he can't hit anything after he's walked 6 or 7 miles and you put him into a tough cover anytime and you're just wasting a perfectly good point. Or a retriever remarking, oh, Gene always seems to get in the blind about a half an hour too late, so he missed the good early flights. And he won't sit out there if it's too cold for the afternoon flights. And I'd like to trade him for one of those Rudy Etchkins or Bubba Woods that can hit something. I'm getting tired of him sending me out for a bird that's healthier than I am. If I were working for a dog, there's no doubt he would cut down on my cocktails, cheese, and crackers, the odd morsel of cherry pie, and make me run along at the end of a check cord. I'd be slapped with a newspaper for chewing tobacco and have worse done for missing easy straightaways. I'd be restricted just one down vest and a duck blind in an effort to improve my ability to swing through a downhill broadbill. Even my little brandy flask would go. I'd be forced to watch Ricky Pope gun woodcock and grouse while I was choke-collared and leashed so I wouldn't spoil his shooting. No doubt a dog isn't entitled to a good owner as the other way around. One friend of mine would be forced to carry about 10 pounds of whistles around his neck because he never knows when not to use one. Another ought to have to wear lead boots because he's always pushes his dog way too fast in heavy cover. And how would you handle the guy who always makes all the dogs hunt dead when everyone knows that the few quail he takes home are accidents or someone else's birds? Or how would you break the guy who hunts one dog all day in the warm weather and never thinks about bringing him a drink of water? Or the one who likes to sting a dog with number nines when he happens to think he's running just a little wide? What would you do with a man who likes to show how tough he is by singing a dog out in a cold and heavy chop for a wing-tipped goose when he ought to use an extra shell or so and just crank up his outboard and go instead? Just imagine what an intelligent dog would do if he were allowed to use a shot collar. No doubt he'd teach some of us how to walk in on a point properly instead of hesitantly shuffling around, and it might not be a bad way of curving the dimwits who think nothing of taking every 70-yard duck shot they can and then not making any effort to mark the wounded sailors that they scratch down every so often. It's not too hard to train a human to open a door when you bark to get out, but it's often something else when it comes to using flea powder and clean kennel bedding. And while humans are generally pretty understanding about needing to play once in a while, why can't they get it through their thick heads that a dog who doesn't wear shoes finds it hard to tell an old one that ought to be chewed from a new one that shouldn't? It seems that people are basically inconsistent and confusing. They take an old brown chair that you'd like to curl up in and cover it all yellow and won't let you come near it. Do they think yellow is bad for a dog or what? And while most dogs are pretty good about letting humans pet them and scratch their heads, others think it's undignified or demeaning, not the right thing in a decent working relationship. Then there's that old question about people thinking a dog ought to be tough. To a lot of them, tough means the same thing as cold, uncomfortable, poorly fed, and ill-housed. Others think it means a lot of shouting and whipping, as if being relatively small and defenseless isn't enough to show who's who. Dogs want to like their people they're with. It always works for a better partnership, but it doesn't always work out that way. Through gaps in communication and lack of effort understanding each other's needs and wants. Naturally, a dog wants a good shot, but he can appreciate a man who can't get out every day and practice, and that we all have our ups and downs. There's even a saying amongst dogs that sun don't shine on the same man's rear end every day. It's hard for a dog to figure out a man who wants a companion to always be perfect, but does so little to improve himself in the field. If a duck hunter makes such a fuss about a retriever getting caught up in a decoy line ever so often, why doesn't he lay them out with a little room between them once in a while? Or if you can see you're working a running bird that only stops for a second or so, why doesn't he move up to a little faster instead of blaming you for flushing one out of range? There's no law against a man having some bird sense, too. It's a long one. I'll wrap it up here because I got one more. There's another old saying that every dog deserves at least one good man. Well, here's one that knows he's not the kind of dog would brag on too heavy, but I'm loyal, faithful, and loving, and hope it isn't too much to ask that my dog looks the other way every once in a while. I got an old brown chair that's just right to curl up in, and if my back's not bothering me, I love to get out on the floor and play. All I need is someone to take me out when the woodcock flights are in, or to sit with me in a duck blind and help scan the skies. I'll always have a sandwich for you in a paper bag, a helping hand, a kind word. We'll be a team, you and I. No matter what, I'll see you sitting in that old brown chair forever. Oh, boy. I don't know if I'll get through this next one. Everybody always says that I do this to myself on purpose. Just my dog. It's one of my favorites. He's just my dog. He's my other eyes that can see above the clouds, my other ears that can hear above the winds. He is the part of me that can reach out into the sea. He's told me 1,000 times over that I am his reason for being, by the way he rests against my legs, by the way he thumps his tail at my smallest smile, by the way he shows his hurt when I leave without taking him. I think it makes him sick with worry when he's not alone to care for me. When I'm wrong, he is delighted to forgive. When I'm angry, he clowns to make me smile. When I'm happy, he is joy unbounded. When I'm a fool, he ignores it. When I succeed, he brags. Without him, I'm only another man. With him, I am all powerful. He is loyal to himself. He has taught me the meaning of devotion. With him, I know a secret comfort and a private peace. He's brought me understanding where before I was ignorant. His head on my knee can heal my human hurts. His presence by my side is protection against my fears of dark and unknown things. He's promised to wait for me whenever, wherever, in case I need him. And I expect I will, as I always have. He's just my dog. So, on National Dog Day, hope somewhere back in your past you've had a few good ones, known a few good ones. Maybe it's time to give one, find out what having a dog's all about. Besides, every dog needs a good man, right? So, that's almost it for another week. I do have one thing I'd like to get to here. Deer hunts for mobility impaired hunters to be held in the upstate. Mobility impaired hunters will again be treated to a unique opportunity to attend two special deer hunts this year. The hunts are scheduled for October 27th and 28th in Cherokee, Spartanburg, and Union counties, and November 3rd and 4th in Lawrence and Newberry County. Applications are available at the DNR website under Hunting Mobility Hunt. Completed applications must be received at the Union DNR office by 5 p.m. Monday, September the 11th. You can call them, or like I said, find the application on the website. Applicants may apply for only one or both hunts. There's no fee and or cost associated with these hunts. Hunting will take place on Friday afternoon, the following Saturday morning of each hunt. Hunters will meet their host at a noon lunch on Friday and disperse to their assigned hunt sites. There are some conditions for meeting mobility impaired, and you can read more about those on the website. If you know someone that wants to get out hunting and is mobility impaired, please share this with them. It's a great opportunity to get them out in the woods. And that's it for another week. Woods and Water, South Carolina. Glad you tuned in. September's just around the corner. I hope you got plans to get outside. You got to make it or it'll pass by without you. Take some back roads when you can. And as always, don't forget that camera. I'll see you back here next week with more Woods and Water, South Carolina. I'm from Carolina in my mind.